Let's remember together some of the greatest TV and movie stars of yesteryear with the woman who knew them. Mary Jane Popp hosted radio and TV shows for nearly 5 decades, meeting these stars and getting them to share their real-life stories. You'll meet them up close and personal as Mary Jane searches her extensive archives for the best and brightest real star talk on Pop Star Talk. And here she is, Mary Jane Popp.
Hi, and welcome to Pop Star Talk. I'm Mary Jane Popp, along with my producer, Kenneth Segura-Knoll, and we are sharing some of the most incredible stars that I've interviewed on both radio and television over 5 decades in the business. Now, as a matter of fact, I love listening to their stories with you and remembering how wonderful they were. Some are gone now, but some are still with us, so let's get right to it. Hi, Ken. How you doing?
I am doing well.
Okay. Now, what if I told you that we'll be hearing a multitude of star voices on this episode of Pop Star Talk?
I can't wait.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm telling you. This man is incredible, always has been incredible, still going at 87 years old. And of course, it's Rich Little. You actually met him at the Tropicana once, didn't you?
Yes, I was in the green room at the Tropicana. I was doing a TV show with a comedian, Mark Yaffe. I was producing a show, and we were there in Vegas together on another event we went over. And I'm sitting there, and Rich Little walks in, and he was just so much fun. Because he was doing every Friday at 7 o'clock, it was Rich Little at the Tropicana's at the comedy room.
The Laugh Factory. They call it the Laugh Factory.
The Laugh Factory, that's right. And, you know, he joked around, and at one point he said, well, why don't you cast me in one of your TV shows or movies? And I said, well, who would I cast?
Yeah, absolutely.
Which voice? But I was thinking, maybe we could get him back on and we could do whole episodes with him doing one voice, and that way we could have everybody on air.
We could go on forever because we're talking 200 plus voices that he's done over the years as an impressionist. But okay, great. So without further ado, I have to tell you, I've been a fan of this man and his talent for a very long time. So who is he? Well, I'm going to let you hear him tell it himself.
You know, I've been doing impressions for a long, long, long time. And I think the key to staying on top is to keep your act fresh, to come up with new people all the time. People like Dr. Phil.
I know that you know that I know that you know. And if you knew that I knew that, then we both would know if we knew.
He is absolutely incredible. He's the voice of some 200 personalities. He's the iconic master mimic Rich Little. From U.S. presidents to actors, he's both entertaining and he can also dig deep on political figures. He's also a movie buff. He loves doing some of the most wonderful stars like Jimmy Stewart and Humphrey Bogart, from stars from yesterday to names like Sylvester Stallone, Clint Eastwood. I mean, I can go on and on and on here. Rich Little is not only a master, but a one of a kind. And his latest project, Little by Little, is a self-written, humorous show about his life. And his book called Little by Little, Celebrities I've Known and Been, actually came out in August. But would you also know he's an artist? Talk about talent. Rich, what a pleasure to have you with us on Pop Off.
My gosh, Rich Little, is he still alive?
Yeah, and kicking, I betcha.
You know, I'm performing at the Tropicana Hotel 5 nights a week here in Las Vegas.
Oh, my.
And people say the darndest things. Last night, somebody came in and said, the wife and I wanted to catch you, Rich, before you died.
Oh, no. Are you serious? So, yeah. You know,
I said, well, you wouldn't want to catch me after I've died, you know.
Yeah, that could be a little bit difficult.
Yeah, that could be difficult.
200 voices. I mean, it seems impossible. Don't you ever mix them up?
Well, sometimes, you know, over the years I've made a few goofs, but I remember once I was doing introduced Gerald Ford in my act, and I did Spiro Agnew instead, and nobody knew the difference. Nobody picked up on it, you know.
How did it all begin for you? I mean, how did you discover that you had this talent, this knack for picking
up imitating teachers?
Really?
Imitating teachers at school.
Oh, I bet they loved that.
I should have got their signatures down. Would have helped me more. But I used to answer the teacher. When the teacher would ask me a question, I would answer them in their voice. And it was usually the wrong answer, and that infuriated them. So they finally ignored me, and that was fine, too.
How much time did you spend in the principal's office?
A little bit of time, you know. I mean, I guess I was kind of a cut up back in those days, you know. But I knew this was going to be my lifetime work, because it wasn't long before the teachers were charging a 2-drink minimum and a cover charge. So I knew that getting into show business.
Now, you also worked as a disc jockey and a talk show host, didn't you?
Yeah, I started out as a disc jockey, in Canada, in Ottawa, you know, my hometown. And, I started out in radio and then did a lot of plays for the little theater when I was younger. And finally said to myself, you know, there's a couple of million actors and very few impersonators. So I decided to do impressions instead of being an actor.
How long does it take you to develop a voice?
Well, it depends. It depends on who I'm doing. You know, I mean, some people you can latch on to very quickly, like Dr. Phil and Dr. Ruth. Remember?
Oh, yes.
Ruth Westheimer.
Yeah.
That only took me about 5 minutes. You know.
You know, Dr. Ruth sounded like this. You know, sex is a lot like air. It's not important unless you don't get any.
That's perfect. I mean, I used to love seeing her on the Johnny Carson show.
Whatever happened to her?
I'm sorry?
Whatever happened to Dr. Ruth? I don't see her anymore.
I don't know if she's
still with us.
I don't know. That's a good question.
Wasn't she a munchkin in The Wizard of Oz?
I think so, too. Her feet would never reach.
Where are the lollipop boys?
Yeah.
Her feet
anyway.
Would never reach the floor. When she was on the Johnny Carson show, they had to put a little stool under her feet.
Oh, yeah. She was only about 4'5", yeah.
Yeah, just a little bitty thing. So now, you're Canadian. You were born in Canada, Ottawa, right?
Yes,
okay.
Ottawa.
Now,
yep.
Is it you became a U.S. citizen, and is it honestly true that the judge that you were before to do this actually wanted you to take the oath as John Wayne?
That's right. He did. He asked me if I'd do that, and I thought, well, that's a little unusual, but I did it. I was sworn in as John Wayne. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States, Pilgrim. You know.
Were there any voices that you did not want to do?
That I did not want to do?
Correct.
Well, you know, I think the best impressions are probably the people I admire the most. You know, that's why I think Jimmy Stewart and Ronald Reagan and, you know, people like Gregory Peck and people that I really admired, you know, Jack Benny, George Burns, you know, those people were idols of mine when I was a kid. And if I wasn't particularly keen about somebody, then I just didn't learn to do their voice. But, I've been very fortunate to have worked with a lot of the great, great comics and the great actors down through the years. Unfortunately, most of them are gone. But, you know, I did 24 Dean Martin roasts, and I think that was more than anybody. But that was a great time for me.
But
because
that's
back in the 70s, I did a lot of variety shows, and we don't have them anymore, you know.
But the thing is, those were real roasts. They don't have roasts anymore. I mean,
Well, they do, but they're pretty blue now, you know, and a lot of the people, you don't know who they are, and it's just not the same. The Dean Martin roasts, really, you know, they were
funny.
They were funny, and they weren't crude, and nobody said anything, you know, that you'd object to. They're pretty clean. Pretty clean, those roasts, yeah.
Well, they feel it's like they have to use the F-bomb over and over and over again. There's no impact after a while. You know, it's like it doesn't even mean anything.
Yeah, well, a lot of younger comics do that, you know, and they think it's the new kind of comedy. You can say anything you want, but it appeals to a certain type of audience, you know. It depends. Young people like it a little more raunchy. Older people don't. And I play to mostly the older people because they grew up with me and they know the voices I'm doing, you know.
Absolutely.
It's so funny. I had a 15-year-old kid on my show the other night and sitting down front, and I was worried about him because he probably didn't know anybody I did. Mm-hmm. And when the show was over, he came up to me and he said, "Mr. Little, I enjoyed your show. You were very funny." And I said, "Well, I'm surprised and delighted." He said, "But I was confused." I said, "Well, why were you confused?" He said, "Well, I was just wondering why you kept changing your voice all the time."
So he thought you were a comedian, huh?
Yeah, he didn't know any of the people I was doing, but he liked the humor, you see.
But that's, again, when you, who was it that said, and I forget, a comedian did say this, that if you write well, you don't have to use all the blue language. Using the blue language means you don't write your material very well.
Well, it's kind of a shock value, you know?
Yeah.
Shock humor.
Well, and people laugh. It's not the belly laugh. It's
sometimes
sort of a nervous
laugh. Sometimes they laugh out of being nervous because they're shocked.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a whole different kind of comedy today, you know? Nobody tells jokes anymore either, you know? I mean, when I was growing up, you had Jack Benny and you had Bob Hope and Myron Cohen and all kinds of people that tell jokes, you know? But people don't tell jokes. It's all observational humor today.
I have a long drive coming to the station every day, and I've got the radio classics. And you know what? You listen to Bob Hope, you listen to Jack Benny, Phil Harris, all those people, and it's like, they're still funny.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, they are. Yeah. But a lot of young people don't know them, you know.
No.
And
I wish
but some young people do, you know. They're interested in the past. And that's great when that happens. When I was a kid, I was interested in the past.
Mm-hmm.
I loved the big band era and all that stuff. I loved the movie stars of the 30s and all that. I just absorbed all that stuff. But today, kids are really only interested in their phone and their laptop and their music, you know?
That's if you can get their nose out of the phone to begin with.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, true.
By the way, Ruth Westheimer is still alive. I just looked
it up.
Oh,
she is.
Yeah, she's 88.
Oh, my God.
88.
Wow, I just found out that Carol Channing, who I just adore, Carol Channing, she's 95 years old. Did
wow.
you know that?
Wow.
Yeah.
But, you know, she's still sharp. I interviewed her a couple of years ago. She was in the Sacramento area and doing a show. And still at her age, still doing a show.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, she's going blind. But, you know, that's sad. And Don Rickles, he's still performing, but he can't stand, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And time catches up to us all, you know. We just have to accept it, I guess.
But, yeah.
But I'm lucky. My health is good, so I'm still performing, you know.
How old are you?
Well, you know, you're only as old as the girls you feel, you know.
Okay. That's okay. I don't mind telling you how old I am. And I'm old, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah,
I'm 70.
All right. Well, I'm more than that. You know, I mean,
okay.
I mean, to a 90-year-old woman, her son, 73, is still a kid, right?
Okay.
Especially if he's still in diapers. I don't.
That's well. That we did. Well, we do the full circle. Remember? We start out in diapers and we finish out in diapers.
That's right. That's right. That's so true. Yes, you're right. Sort of. Yeah, that's funny.
So how do you perfect, you know, the voices? I mean, do you, like, run it by somebody?
Just listen over and over. I'm listening to Donald Trump every day.
I hear
different things every day. I mean, there's two Donald Trump voices, the one where he's speaking to a large crowd. That's a little different than the, you know, the sort of personal one-on-one interview. That's a different sound. But, you know, we're going to build a wall. You know, I mean, it's kind of a little raspy, and it's amazing. You know, with all the traveling he did during the campaign, you know, all the time and all those speeches, it's a wonder he didn't get laryngitis.
So how was Arnold Schwarzenegger for you as far as doing his voice?
Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, okay. You know, I started out doing doing Shakespeare. You know, I used to do all her plays. I did Omelette when I was 17. To be or not to be, you know, that is question. Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, it's so, you're so cool. How you can just jump right into them is amazing.
Well, you know, I've always had that ability to do them quickly. And most impersonators, when I was growing up, you know, they would turn around and get into the character and then turn back. But I always wanted to do them fast, so I do them quickly, one after the other, without any delay, you know. And that was always one of the things I did.
Well, that's the amazing part of it, how you can just jump from one to the other with no preparation whatsoever. You just go right into it.
I can, you know, suddenly I can be doing Johnny Carson, and then I could be doing Jimmy Stewart, and then Jack Benny, and then George Burns, you know, just jumping from one to the other.
My God, you're absolutely amazing, Rich. I mean, seriously. And I'm not just shining you on. I'm just saying that this is incredible, the voices, how you jump from one to the other and how you perfected them. How do they react when you come up with a new voice, other than Trump?
Well, that was one of the reasons I did so many Dean Martin roasts was, if they had five people on the dais that I could imitate, I was usually on the show. You know, because they love that. Mm-hmm. When you do somebody that's there, they cut to their reaction. And that's why I did 24 Dean Martin roasts, I think more than anybody, was that, you know, they'd phone me up and say, oh, well, we've got your act on our show, you know, next week, and we want you on. And so that's why I did so many.
Amazing.
It was great for me. I was so young, you know, and to meet all my idols like that. And stand up in front of them. It was a bit nerve-wracking, but it was a great time of my life to do those roasts, particularly. Yeah. That was great fun.
You know who I had a lot of fun? One of the very first interviews I did, and this was back when I first started doing my television show, was back in 1974 or 5, somewhere around there. Paul Lynn. And I don't know if he was like maybe had a long night or whatever, but it was so funny because I had open-toed shoes, and he kept commenting on my toes. The whole interview was about my toes. And you know, I learned so much from these people because they were funny. I mean, he was talking about my toes. He looked like he was in pajamas instead of a, you know, regular jumpsuit or anything. But it was funny because it came from their soul. A comedian has to come from your soul, doesn't it?
Yeah. Paul was very funny on Hollywood Squares. That made him. But I must tell you, he was one of the few people that did not like my impression.
Really?
At all. Oh, no, he hated it. Really. And I thought it was a joke at first, but he really did not like it. And every time I would do him, like on Hollywood Squares or a Dean Martin roast, they would cut to a shot of his reaction. And he'd always say, "Who's he doing? Who's that? I'll get a day job. That's the thing." I mean, he just didn't like it
really?
At all.
Huh.
But Paul, as you said, he was funny. I mean, he had a great sense of comedy and timing, but he was not a happy person at all.
Isn't that a lot with a lot of comedians are like that?
Well, we know that, don't we, with Robin Williams and people like that who, you know, I don't know whether they can't take the pressure or what it is, but, you know, it's kind of sad when somebody that popular like Paul Lynn and that famous is so miserable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he on Hollywood Squares, he would never talk to anybody.
Oh,
just
wow.
Sat in the corner. And sometimes he gets so bombed that after the dinner break, they'd have to actually tie him into the chair, into the square.
Oh, my word.
And, but yet he still was funny. If people only knew, they couldn't see, but he was tied into the chair because they thought he would fall out.
Amazing.
You know?
Well, maybe.
He'd still be funny. I mean, Peter Marshall would say to him, "Paul, can you get an elephant drunk?" And he'd say, "Oh, sure, but you'll never get it up to your apartment."
Yeah. You know, and you know, maybe it was because I was just young and dumb when I first started out doing that. But, you know, and he was funny, but I think he was bombed that day when I was on the TV set.
Well, if he kept talking about your toes, he must have been.
Yeah, it was just fun. One thing I have learned, though, about comedians over the years, and that is, you can take a person who is a comedian, and they can be a dramatic actor, but you can't take a dramatic actor and automatically turn him into a comedian. It just doesn't work.
Well, you know, yeah, there's been many examples of that. Don Rickles,
yep.
Great dramatic actor when he had to be, and George Burns, you know, and The Odd Couple, or Sunshine Boys, that's right, Sunshine Boys.
Yeah. Now, were there any presidents that ever were upset about your making, you know, their voices or doing their voices?
No, not really. One time I did Nixon in front of them. Very early in my career, I was invited to a kind of a garden party down in San Clemente, and I was thrilled to be asked. And at that time, all of Hollywood was conservative, and I went and was thrilled, and I met my act. My act was there. I mean, all the greats were there. And I ended up, actually, Debbie Reynolds threw me at the back of Nixon and said, "Mr. President, Rich is going to do you."
Oh, my.
And he didn't know whether that meant shoot him or what, but he turned around glaring at me, and I did my Nixon in front of him. And halfway through the routine I was doing, everybody gathered around, he looked at me, and he looked at his wife, and he said, why is this young man speaking in this strange voice?" he didn't know I was doing him.
Really?
He had no idea I was
Seriously?
Imitating him.
No kidding.
No, really. And I was so embarrassed. I remember Glenn Ford was there, and he said, "Rich, I hope your car is parked north so you can get back to Canada."
Oh, that's too funny.
But then George Burns said, I was so embarrassed I ate a flower. And John Wayne said, "Somebody get a rope." It was not my finest moment. I thought I was going to be deported. Because Nixon had no idea I was imitating him and did not laugh once.
Really?
I thought I did him quite well, because when I left that party, his wife Pat went with me. So, you know, I think I did him pretty good.
Absolutely. Well, the funny thing, too, is that he honestly did not know you were imitating him.
No, he didn't have a clue.
Amazing.
But remember, Nixon didn't have much of a sense of humor.
No,
you know?
He didn't.
I mean, he wore the same blue suit for over 30 years, and he never took the hanger out of it, you know.
Jeez. Which personality took you the longest to perfect?
Gerald Ford took me a while.
Really?
Gerald Ford, yeah.
Well, he
because he didn't have much to his voice.
Yeah.
Gerald Ford talked in kind of a monotone voice.
Mm-hmm.
Not very exciting. One time down in Palm Springs, I was doing Gerald Ford, and I was doing all the presidents, and the podium I had was made out of cork, but nobody knew this.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, when I did Gerald Ford, I hit the podium. It flew into a million pieces, and I fell off the stage in Gerald Ford's lap.
Oh, no.
And I thought I'd killed him. Or at least
injured
I saw
him
he was all right. And I had the microphone in my hand, and I put it up to his face, and he said, "Whoops."
No kidding. Oh, my gosh. That's amazing.
Yeah, and Sinatra was there, and Frank was pounding on the ground. He was on the floor. He was in hysterics over that.
Now, what about Sinatra? I mean, this guy, you didn't do anything to the boss.
No, I got along really well with Frank.
Yeah?
I really did. He was very, very nice to me. He was a man of many moods, and if you got him in a bad mood, stay away from him. But I must tell you that he was always nice to me. Very, very gracious and I had a wonderful time with Frank. He had a great sense of humor, and, you know, his mood could change, but I happen to always see him at a good time, so I have good memories about him.
Now, what about people like Mel Torme, you know, this singer, Sinatra is one of them. Did you ever imitate their singing or strictly the voice?
Oh, yeah, well, Mel Torme got me on the Judy Garland show. He was the one that did it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we did a show in Toronto together, and I put all my voices on a tape, and he played it for Judy Garland, and she booked me on the show.
Wow.
And Mel did that. Mel and I were great friends.
Nice.
And I imitated him. He had a wonderful voice, didn't he?
Yeah. Oh, fantastic. He could scat
just
like nobody.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire. That kind of a mellow voice that Mel had.
But he could also scat. He was
great scatter.
Oh,
great.
Fabulous. I mean, I used to sit there and watch him because I'm a singer from way back. But it was amazing to me. I couldn't imagine how he would do it. But I think
I once saw him with Ella Fitzgerald, and they're both scatting, and it was incredible. Mel was very, very talented. Many areas. He, unbelievable movies. He built model airplanes. He had gun collections. He could compose. He could sing. He was multi-talented.
You said you liked, you know, looking to the past and everything. Like people like what? Orson Welles? Those type of people?
I worked with Orson Welles.
No
yeah.
kidding. When?
Yeah.
How?
I did a movie called The Other Side of the Wind with Orson Welles back in the 70s.
Uh-huh.
Never completed. He never finished it. It was never released. And I worked on the movie with him for about 3 weeks, and then I had to leave. I had some nightclub commitments, and I never finished my part.
Hmm.
And it's just one of those movies that's on the shelf. But I had a wonderful time with Orson. I loved Orson. He was just wonderful.
Talk about talent.
Great man.
Yeah.
Great man.
And vision. So many. That was the other thing. So many of these people that you imitate and that you still keep alive for us because of your imitations, they had vision. They were creative. I honestly don't see much of that these days. Do you?
No, that's true. That's true. Yeah. I mean, I was lucky to come along in the 70s, and that's when variety shows were at their peak.
Oh, yeah.
I did a different variety show almost every week. And that's what made me. But today there are none. So, you know, it's just a different time. I came along at the right time. I really did.
Well, no, you know what? It was meant to be. That door was open for you because of you being special.
Well, you know, I was imitating people that had never been done before. And, you know, I do Dennis Weaver and Fred McMurray and Dana Andrews. And, you know, a lot of these people, a lot of these stars that nobody had ever done before. And that James Mason, you know, and that's what got me on the Garland show was the fact that I was imitating people that nobody had ever heard before.
Amazing.
You know?
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned Fred McMurray, Barry Livingston, who was Ernie on the My Three Sons show.
Right.
Just did a ballad of Fred McMurray. I just had him on last week to remember some of these people. If young people would hear some of these people and see some of the work that they did, I think they would be astounded.
Well, you know, a lot of parents play the Dean Martin roast for their kids, mm-hmm. and they're kind of curious. You know, you're seeing the best of the best, and
yes.
they may watch it and you know and see how funny Jack Benny was and George Burns and Don Rickles and all Ruth Buzzy, all these people, and so young people are being exposed to this stuff, you know. Because they can get a lot of it now on YouTube, you know.
Yeah, he was just incredible. When he mentioned Judy Garland's show, that was his American television debut with Judy Garland. And he did so many others. The Pink Panther in cartoons in 66 and 67. He appeared with Judy Carn, the sitcom Love on a Rooftop, and That Girl in 1967. Oh, and he mentioned about offending Nixon. Well, they didn't offend Nixon. Nixon didn't understand what he was doing. But he also had a problem because in the 60s and 70s, he was on the Johnny Carson show like once a month. And I guess one of the times that he did a bit on Johnny Carson, he offended Johnny Carson. And that was the end of that. He did not appear on the Johnny Carson show, the late night show anymore. So, but it is just great hearing the stories and then how he goes in and out of the voices is just incredible, isn't it, Ken? And of course, I also had to ask Rich to tell me in 25 words or less just who he is.
A young Canadian kid who loved show business and movies and actors and had a dream and made it come true.
Wow.
By just... working my way up and saying, nothing's going to stop me. I'm just, I know what I want to do, and I'm going to do it.
I love it. That's perfect. Now, tell me a little bit about Tebow.
Well, Tebow's my cat, mm-hmm. a one-eyed cat. He has only one eye.
Aww.
He had cancer in his other eye, and he had to take it out. But Tebow's a cat that's been with me for a long time. You know, I've been married four times, you know, so
what?
I think I'll stick with my cat.
Your cat? You know? Been there with your cat probably longer than some of the marriages, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Yes.
Why?
Well, a lot of my marriages, they threw minute rice.
Why four marriages, do you think?
I don't know. Maybe they didn't know who I was.
You know what? It's probably
They would go to bed with Clark Gable and wake up with Truman Capote.
That would be a surprise. That's for sure. Now, you have two daughters, Bria and Lindsay. Are either
right.
one of them in show business?
No. No, not at all. No.
But that's okay. No. I mean, they made a choice, and you're probably just as happy that they didn't, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I wouldn't deny them if they had talent, but both of them aren't interested in show business. They like it, but they don't want to be part of it.
And you have just one grandchild?
Yeah.
Elena. How old is your grandchild?
She's, Elena is probably five.
Five. Oh, just a little one, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. If you could look to the future now, and there's always a future, you know, I don't care what age we are, there's a future. What would you want to accomplish yet that you haven't accomplished?
Well, I've always wanted to go to Broadway, just once. You know, and I almost did with a show I did on Jimmy Stewart, but it never quite made it, almost. And I don't know that that's going to happen or not, but I would love to do Broadway. I'd love to be in a movie. You know, I wanted to do that movie that Bill O'Reilly did on Killing Reagan, but they choose somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I sometimes I see people playing Nixon or playing Reagan or somebody I can do, and they pass me by because they think I'm a comedian and I can't act, you know?
That's the sad part of show business. They put you into this little globe and say, well, this is what you are, and you have to stay and do that, a comedian or a dramatic
yeah.
artist or whatever, instead of saying, look, there's talent there. It doesn't make any difference what the part is if the talent comes out.
Yeah.
That's sad.
Well, you know, when I watched that Killing Reagan, I had an open mind. If the guy was good, I'd say, hey, great Reagan. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
But he wasn't. So, you know,
gotcha.
I just turned it off. But, you know, that's part of life, you know. Rejection is part of show business, really.
You did a lot of, well, how do you handle that? All the years.
Let it go.
Yeah, it's hard to let it go because we do want to be loved. I mean, that's why we're in this business, aren't we?
Yeah, but if you look at the life of most actors, especially the big ones, you can see how they struggled. It's amazing how they struggled when, you know, they have no money and a very poor beginning and work themselves up to, you know, to be a huge star and have millions of dollars. And they came from nothing. That's amazing. You know, like Sidney Poitier was a guy from the islands that couldn't even speak English, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And what he did was incredible, listening to soap operas all day and learning to speak.
Wow.
And then he knew nothing about show business. And just think what he did with his life, you know? Amazing. A lot of people like that.
Now, you've made, I know you haven't done movies, but you did a lot of television. You made dramatic guest shots on Fantasy Island,
yeah.
Murder,
yeah.
She Wrote, Hawaii 5-0, MacGyver, Police Woman, Mannix.
Yeah.
Tons of stuff.
Yeah.
Did you like television?
Oh, yeah. Okay, my background is theater. And
okay.
So I loved it. I loved it when I could play a straight part, you know. I once played on Police Woman, a murder rapist.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh.
And I phoned up my mother after, and when it was aired, she said, I didn't watch it.
How come
my son is not a murder rapist?
How cute. You know, did your mom have a sense of humor the way you do? and your dad?
Yeah, but, you know, she was a typical mother. Like, I would be on the Ed Sullivan Show and phone her up right after the show, and she'd say, "Richard, I didn't like the tie."
You are an amazing man. And you're very humble compared to a lot of people. You know, they'd say, "Oh, look at what he's done. His resume is incredible." And you have every reason to be kind of snobby, and you're not at all.
Well, not everybody knows me. Some people think I'm Little Richard.
Oh. You know what?
Great. One time I was doing a show, and somebody yelled out, "Do Tutti Frutti for us."
Oh, no way. Serious?
Yeah. I said, no. I'm Rich Little, not Little Richard.
Wrong Richie, huh? You know, it is sad to me that people do not realize the talent that some people have, like yours. That is, it grows. You keep up with everything. I mean, you've done Sylvester Stallone. You've done Clint Eastwood. I mean, my gosh, is there anybody you haven't done that's famous?
Angelina Jolie, I've never done her.
I would not
I'd
expect
like to.
You to.
Now that she's single again, you know, it's a possibility. Right. I'd never be lonely if I could do her, would I?
No, not at all.
I'd probably jump myself. You know?
That is so funny. As far as some of the stars that you've done, I know Jimmy Stewart is one of your favorites. Are there other favorites?
Yeah. I've always liked, I've liked actors. Spencer Tracy and, you know, some of the greats. Gregory Peck, I always thought he was one of the top ones. And one time before Gregory Peck passed away, he did a one-man show in Rochester, New York. And I went up to see him, and I sat in the audience. He knew I was there. And I got up and asked him a question. I said, "Mr. Peck, does anybody do an impression of you?" And he said, "Well, I hear there's a fellow by the name of Rich Little that supposedly does me, but that remains to be seen." And then I did a whole speech from MacArthur, his famous speech from MacArthur. Uh-huh. And really, I really got into it. And when I finished it, the audience applauded. And then he said, "You better come backstage after the show. We're going to have to work on that."
Oh, no kidding. Did you?
I did, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, just out of curiosity. Now,
but he was one of my idols. You know, I love Burt Lancaster. I love all those actors of the 40s, you know.
Oh,
God,
yeah.
They were great. Cagney. I met James Cagney, and I met Edward G. Robinson early in my career. And that was a big thrill for me.
Wow. Well, that's the time when there were stars. There aren't stars now, not the same way.
Yeah, well, that's true. They were larger than life, and they were always the same, weren't they, in every picture?
Yep, absolutely. Well, and that's the other thing, too. I didn't call them actors. They were themselves every time. John Wayne, I don't care if he was a soldier or a cowboy. It was John Wayne, right?
Right.
You know?
Always.
And same.
Always the good guy. Well, not entirely the good guy, but mostly.
Yeah. But, you know, you still knew the voice. It never changed much. Some of the stars today, like Meryl Streep, I mean, she takes on so many different personas, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, well, I think she's the greatest actress of all time. Really.
Agreed. Agreed.
Yeah.
No
doubt.
There's
nobody that has a range like she does.
Wow.
Love to meet her. That would be a thrill. I'd be nervous.
Yeah, I would too, because it's just, you don't know who you're talking to. We've seen her in so many things, you know.
Well, she seems like a very nice person.
I've heard that she is. I honestly have heard that she is.
Now, like, what a career. You see, Betty Davis was great, but Betty Davis was usually the bitch, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
Pretty mildly.
Absolutely. Well, she made her living doing that. That was cool.
And, you know, but Meryl Streep has played so many different kinds of people.
Yeah. I mean, from
great range.
Julia Child to the head person in England, you know. It's like, really?
Yeah.
And it's almost like you didn't know who it was. If you didn't know the credits that were running, you wouldn't know it was Meryl Streep. She was unbelievable. And Ken, Not when I talked to Rich, it was in 2016 is when I did that interview. And I didn't realize how many talents came from Canada. I mean, there were so many actors, even today, a lot of them came down from Canada, don't you think?
Yeah, they're coming down, but there's a tariff on them.
I know. Yeah, they're going to have to pay to be here now. But it's true. There's a lot of talent that we have. Because they were so good at not having the Canadian accent. Some are from Australia, and, you know, they dropped the Australian accent down under. But it's just amazing. He also told me, and I didn't get a chance to really get into it with him, that his last wife, Marie, was very much into having a foundation between, you know, the both of them. And it was for helping the homeless. And that now they still have that, I guess, foundation, but they also have another foundation that works for wounded warriors. And he is very, very strong into that. And I admire all these people because they look at other folks and the problems that they have and want to help them too. And I think Rich Little has that heart to do it, don't you think?
Oh, yes. And anybody that'll help our soldiers, especially homeless soldiers. I really, I do a few fundraisers for homeless veterans because it's hard to be, you know, disabled and then to be homeless. It's, you know, but no, he's a great guy.
And the funny thing is, you know, I've interviewed other people who are impressionists. Jim Meskimen is one. He's the son of Marion Ross, who was Mrs. C on Happy Days. And he's good. He's very good at it. But yeah. I don't think there'll ever be another Rich Little. You know, this is a wonderful comedy.
Oh, no. You know, the number of impressions he did was just amazing. Or does. You know, it's just amazing. It's kind of hard because I would imagine that the audience is getting smaller and smaller that will remember the voices, remember the people. Yeah. But he still packed them into every Friday night at the Tropicana.
Well, I think he's still doing, if I'm not mistaken, we'll find out because I'm going to try and get a hold of him. I really would love to talk to him again. Not that he's going to pass away immediately, but you never know. I mean, he's 80. He was born in 1938. So, you know, he's getting up there, 87, going on 88.
Right.
But he's still touring in his one-man show.
Right.
And I think that kind of keeps him going. You know, I'm up there too, but it's like it gives me the impetus to go on for the next day, to do the research on some of the people that I've talked to over the years. You and I have talked about these kinds of things before because a lot of them are gone. I just don't want their memories to be lost. It's not fair because their talents were so incredible.
Well, maybe we can help in keeping the memories of these people who are so talented by doing the Pop Star Talk Show.
You bet. And it's so funny, too, because I love talking about these people. Like, I enjoy watching some of the old movies. And I know you've done documentaries, you've done movies. I love the kind of movie that you watch and you enjoy because you get hooked into it. You want to know what's going to happen. It's not like it's going to blow up or something. And I'm not knocking, you know, the Marvel stuff that you see today because they're spectacular. They really are. But it's not the same. They don't get to you. Some of the old movies do get to you. You get fascinated and you can see them over and over again and you still enjoy because you see little nuances that you didn't recognize before. Isn't that something that you've done in the past? I bet.
Oh, no, I fall asleep at action movies and I'm wide awake at Hallmark movies, you know?
Yeah.
But you know, again, something happened one day. I was at it was a charter school. In a high school charter school, and I brought some films to talk about films, and I had played a black and white film, and there were students in that class that had never seen a black and white film.
Really?
Wow, that amazed me. You know, some students said, can you turn the color up?
Well, yeah, but you know, some of the movie makers today and into the 20s and 2025, it's interesting because they put little segments of black and white in,
right.
And it blends. It blends in because it gives the storyline. It gets into the storyline.
Yeah. And, you know, lighting for black and white is a little different.
Difficult.
Well, actually, it's easier to light for black and white because you know, color. Because you have the contrast, black and white. So you play off each end, where with color, you have to kind of balance the lighting for everything.
I still like black and white, though, I got to tell you.
I mean, you can make it very dramatic.
And I love Rich Little because he did so many of the clubs. I mean, he went way back to the Sands, the Golden Nugget, Caesar's Palace, Desert Inn, of course, the Tropicana. You know what I miss when I've gone to Las Vegas a few times, not too often, but I miss some of those, the Riviera, the Tropicana. When you walked into those clubs, you almost felt like you were looking for Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin and Sammy Davis Jr. You know, you were looking for the Rat Pack. And you had that feeling of the mobsters. Not anymore. I mean, they've got fabulous casinos, but I don't know. It doesn't have the same feel that Las Vegas had at one time.
But there's one casino up in Tahoe.
Oh?
It's called Cal Neva.
Oh.
And half of the casino is in California. The other half is in Nevada. And it's up on the hills, and there are tunnels that go into these bungalows down on the lake.
Mm.
And that's where the Rat Pack and Marilyn Monroe and all of them would meet to rendezvous. But they have an enormous collection of black and white photographs of the Rat Pack, Marilyn Monroe, all the stars that would go up there.
Huh. Oh, I've got to get up there and see some of that, because I don't know. Maybe it's just reminiscent. Maybe because I saw all the movies, you know, the black and white movies with the Rat Pack. It was a different time. I realize it was a different time. I just wish we didn't completely do away with that time, that we can still go back to it. But I don't know. Maybe it's past that time. I have no idea. What do you think?
I mean, we have Brad Pitt, and we have, you know, those stars that, you know, that are in, like, in Casino, the movie. And
well, that's true.
It fit that category.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
You know, it's funny because there was a lot of controversy about those stars back then.
Oh, yeah.
But there was not the media that we had from it.
Absolutely.
So when people got that news, it was really special to read about, oh, Marilyn Monroe was with so-and-so at Cal Neva. Marilyn Monroe's last movie was shot up in Reno.
Mm-hmm.
And on the weekend, she'd come down to Cal Neva and meet the members of the Rat Pack there, rendezvous there. And very interesting story. When I was up there, well, this is a long time ago, there was an older guy that he actually was kind of like a bartender, but I never saw him serve a drink, but he was behind the bar.
Mm-hmm.
He had all the stories of all the meeting people.
Oh, wow.
He'd start talking, and there'd be a crowd listening to his stories about Dean Martin and Sammy Davis and Frank Sinatra and Robert Kennedy and John F. Kennedy.
It was an amazing time. And I know it's an era gone by, but I just hope we don't completely forget it. And that's why we do what we do with, you know, pop star talk, kind of reminders about what that time was all about.
Yep.
So, well, that's it for another pop star talk. Hope you enjoyed Rich Little as much as we did bringing it to you. So till next time, I'm Mary Jane Pop with Ken and engineer Greg, hoping that you will join us for another trek through star time. And don't forget, live simply, laugh often, love deeply, and of course, dare to dream.
Produced by Autovita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.